питання українською мовою, і потім приходимо на англійську. Отже, організаційні питання. Ті, хто, ті, кому видали плакат, ну, по-перше, я вибачаюся, така не вихов на добрий день, чи вже добрий вечір, от, значить, декілька таких питань. Хто хоче каву, будь ласка, підходьте, тому що вона трошки пізно закипіла. От, по-друге, ті, кому видали анкети, заповніть їх, будь ласка, ми будемо дуже раді, тому що все це на покращення, скажімо, нашого сервісу, вашого обслуговування, тому, будь ласка, заповніть і до цього дуже, як скажемо, ретельно відноситись. От, по-друге, чи вже по-третє, значить, там є плакат позаду, ті, хто вже був у нас на зустрічі, як знає, там є стікери, то, будь ласка, напишіть, клеїте стікер відповідно до того, про що ви хочете сказати. Є там щодо атмосфери зустрічі. Ось дівчата показують, великий плакат, ось Катя наша показує, так. А, значить, там є щодо атмосфери зустрічі, чи вона була неформальна, чи формальна. І стосовно спікера, чи була вам цікава лекція, чи була вона, як на вашу думку, трохи не знаю. Так, що ще? У нас далі зустріч 18 числа, 18 березня. Ця зустріч буде з Павлом Будімовим на тему генофонду та ролі молоді у суспільному культурному процесі України. От, тож, реєструйтеся, приходьте, зустрічі, це буде цікавою, великою, масштабною. Стосовно організаційних питань, ми завжди шукаємо авторів, от наш головний редактор. Тож, будь ласка, якщо пишете якісь статті або маєте якісь навики, цікавитеся, хочете, то, будь ласка, ми завжди раді. Ну, я думаю, все сказали, тому зараз вже переходимо на англійську мову. От, я сподіваюся, що вам буде все зрозуміло. So, here is Michael, our Michael Hammerschlag. He's a very, I think, curious person because his spheres of interest are very incredible, really. I think that you will feel that. So today our meeting is dedicated to the problems of environment and especially the global warming itself. So this is election discussion, so you can ask questions, ask everything you want to dedicate to this topic, yeah. So don't be afraid, it's a free election, and please. Then I think this topic will be, this election will be informative, there will be some presentation you will see. And Michael now will tell something about himself, yeah. And I wish you a good meeting today. Thanks.
Hey, greetings. Hi, I'm a journalist. This is what an introduction does, by the way. It's tell who the person is. I'm a journalist. I've written for a lot of different papers in America and in Moscow, actually around the world. New York Times, International Herald Tribune, Seattle Times, Providence Journal, Columbia Journalism Review, every English paper in Moscow once upon a time. And I did this. This is actually an article I did a couple of years ago that investigating all the latest science in global warming. And as I kept, now I've written about it for ages, like decades actually. One of the second article I ever wrote professionally was about the energy crisis actual touching on global warming. And a piece I did about 10 or 12 years ago, I got a nice letter from Al Gore when he was vice president, saying, oh yes, thank you, I read your articles. And when he lost the presidency, I also lost a lot too, because that letter probably would have, got me all kinds of incredible connections. And so I did this. There's about 2-3 month investigation I did on it, and every single I'm losing my voice, unfortunately. This is extremely unusual. Every single thing I looked at was shocking in that it seemed about 8 new scientific findings seemed to prove that it was going to be about twice as bad as anybody's talking about, like twice as bad as the worst case estimates, the actual warming. And nobody was really adding them up. Everybody kept writing articles about all these different parts of it, like, cooling the air because the jets are cooling the atmosphere, or that methane is causing a huge amount of global warming, or the coal dust from all these huge coal-fired plants in China are heating the air and melting the ice. Each one of them separately, seemed to say, well, this is going to be much, much worse than anybody's talking about. But when you added them all up, it was disastrous. It was terrible. It was just incredible. And I thought, you know, nobody's putting it all together. So I put it all together in an article. And in fact, you know, more and more things have come out. You know, there's also some deniers. There's some people that don't believe it. And some of these right-wing conservatives got a hold of a whole bunch of emails, including the people that I interviewed who were part of that real climate thing. I interviewed about five top people in it, working at Goddard Spacecraft Center, and a woman at University of Washington that's worked all across Siberia. Another guy who's an expert on methane and clathrates, and you know, over a period of weeks and weeks and weeks, you know, it was, I don't know, 10, 12 hours of interviews and reading hundreds of articles. And even now, every week you can find some other thing where they go, well, this really, really bad thing is happening, and we don't really know, but 80% of it, we think it's probably global warming. You know, from death of corals in Puerto Rico to now they're just saying there's huge reduced oxygen levels in parts of the ocean, like dead zones, and they think it's because it's getting warmer. So anyway, this is the article which I will just read to you, and I will try to do it slowly. It has a lot of numbers, but I do speak fast, and I'm sorry. Show the crowd. and the title is, Are We Cooked? You know, which means vernacular, are you in big trouble? You know, are we cooked? Global warming is much worse than you think. I can actually put the article up on the screen for you if you want to follow it. I'm not sure if it would make it easier for you. Well, let's see, is this starting to cycle now? I don't want it to cycle.
Ouch.
What's this thing doing? I don't want this. How do I stop it? I want it to move when I press it. It's just cycling. Hello? PowerPoint person? I should have known there's something wrong with this thing. Stop. Okay. I think it's stuck. Anyway, you can show that. I can. Let's see. Yeah, I'll just put on the pictures. That's good enough. New facts in the last few years show global warming will be much worse than thought. And detailed analysis of 4 kilometers of Antarctic and Greenland ice cores show catastrophic temperature changes of 8 to 14 degrees happen fast, as quickly as a single year, which is really shocking. Over the last 15 years, climatologists have drilled 5 cores down through 900,000 years of ice, of history, through 8 complete ice ages, revealing temperatures, weather, dust, pollen, bacteria, and the actual atmospheric gases trapped in the yearly tree-like layers. Like a tree, they have layers that they can extract after they drill this core all the way down through all this 4 kilometers of ice. The most detailed record of Earth's history ever seen. That's the graph of 140,000 years of temperature changes. And you can see, this thing, I can't. Oh, come on, I probably lost it, all right? Excuse my French. Should I escape? Yeah, this thing just keeps going into the cycle, just program. All right, let's see if it stops. I just want it to stop there. Don't do anything.
Just change it with.
I just want to freeze it. I'll just change it with a keyword. Anyway, these are enormous temperature changes, really, really quickly, and you can see this is the last ice age. You know, from here to about there. This is the temperature we are now, which is significantly above the last ice age. And all the way back through 8 ice ages, we're hotter now than we've ever been. They've supposedly dug into sediment in the ocean 6 million years deep, and we're warmer now than we've been in 6 million years. So, you know, you had a cold winter. I know it was a cold winter. Trust me, I know. And it was a terrible cold last winter. And Washington, D.C. had a meter 0.3 of snow. Washington D.C. had had this much snow 13 times in its history. But they say over the Earth, whole Earth, you know, that's the weather, local weather. Climate is the entire world. And over the entire world, they say this January was the second coldest or second warmest January in history. So huge changes can happen really, really quickly. You know, apparently, you know, the full Antarctica, over the last 15 years, climatologists have drilled 5 cores. Yeah, The big one, the full Antarctic record, was only finished in 2004. So this is pretty new history, all the stuff from these ice cores. Like that. According to a recent book, Ice, by Newsweek reporter, the shock was the startling shift, was the startling abrupt shifts. 20 times in the last 100,000 year ice age, temperatures spiked upwards 6 to 11 degrees centigrade in as little as 1 to 3 years in the northern hemisphere. Climate changes apparently aren't often like mountain building, slow grinding changes that take thousands of years. They're sometimes more like an earthquake, sudden sharp convulsions that can totally change life on Earth. Or maybe like a seesaw that slowly overbalanced slams to the other side. After the 13,000 Younger Dryas returned to Ice Age weather 12,000 years ago, let's see if I can get this thing to cooperate, which was here. It got warmer, and then boom, it went down, got really cold again for about 1,000 years before it got warm to the current Ice Age. After the spastic start of the current interglacial warm period, in other words, it started to get warmer this period. The normal condition of Earth is Ice Age. The Ice Ages last 100,000 years. The warm periods last 12 to 18,000 years. And you can put this here, because I want this up. And anyway, 12,000 years ago, probably because this huge glacial lake that covered North America, like a huge portion of North America, broke and all this fresh water ran into the Atlantic Ocean. The end was explosive. Temperature extremes went up 11 degrees in less than 1 year. What she says, this guy, Greenland ice borer, this guy did these ice cores. He says, I cannot insist that the climate changed in 1 year, but it certainly looks that way. Yeah, 1 year. We're playing with fire here. The Earth's atmosphere is as thin as an apple relative to the size of the Earth. It's a very, very tiny little thing, and it really exists only in the first 5 or 8 kilometers. Past that, you know, there's only 5% or 3% of the atmosphere, very little. The start of the Younger Dryas was harsh too. The temperature plummeted 10 degrees centigrade in a few years, but the rises have always been incredibly precipitous. The last warm interglacial period, 150,000 years to 135,000 years ago, the Eemian period, was also punctuated by sudden severe coolings, much less stable than ours. By the way, most of these warming numbers refer to the most extreme changes, not the worldwide average, which doesn't change much. The difference between now and the Ice Age is maybe 3 degrees or to 5 degrees centigrade. It's not a huge amount. The average things are gigantic movements of numbers. So I'm more referring to the most extreme changes. Evidence is sobering. Let's see how we're doing here. These are the ice ages, the ice age cycles. Right? This is what the Earth usually goes through. This really is annoying. I don't know why it does that. It shouldn't do that. Because I'm not saying do the program. Anyway, these are the 100,000 year ice ages. Right? So for this has been happening for 3 million years or so. This regular cycle, which happens through long period orbital variations actually of Earth. It goes from elliptical to more circular, and the elliptical one is actually gets closer to the sun, so it warms, it's a little warmer. But what's happening now is completely different than this, they think. And what actually caused the ice ages to start, you know, is also really, really undetermined. So we're now in, you know, the period. This is the carbon monoxide variations, right? The highest I saw in looking back through the whole record was something like, I think about 270 parts per million of carbon monoxide. And we're now at 385. When I started this article, it was about 380. That's how fast it's moving. It's moving now some like 3% increase a year. It was 2.5% increase 2 or 3 years ago. It's accelerating exponentially. And carbon dioxide isn't the worst player in this. The evidence is sobering. The spiking charts of temperature over the last million years, measured by the amount of heavy oxygen, like an isotope of oxygen, they can figure out the temperature, exactly matches the peaks and valleys of carbon dioxide and methane concentrations. But the current CO2 levels are off the chart, 38% higher than pre-industrial levels and 27% above anything seen in nearly a million years. And the entire unprecedented rise has been since 1750, the official cutoff for before industrial greenhouse gases. The 10,000-year ice age cycles are believed to be mainly due to several variations of the Earth orbit. But potent greenhouse gases can amplify or alter them. And I think they're completely altered. We're not going to have another ice age. You know, it's not going to happen. What's happening now is unknown, because we've really changed the Earth. Average world warming is quite deceptive, since the effects increase enormously with latitude. So an 8/10 of a degree centigrade rise in the tropics, or 8/10 of a degree centigrade average rise, the latest number 3 years ago, 4 years ago, over 100 years can mean a 0.4, only a 4/10 of a degree centigrade rise in the tropics, a 1 to 1.5 degree rise in Europe, and a 3 to 6 degree rise in the Arctic, especially in nighttime temperatures minimums, which reduces ice formation. One of the guys I interviewed was Gavin Schmidt, NASA Goddard climatologist, real high-level guy, my primary source for a lot of this stuff. So you have a factor of 3 between the lowest and the highest latitude, said NASA Goddard climatologist Gavin Schmidt. Some places have warmed much more than normal in the last 50 years. There's been a huge warming in Siberia and Alaska, but if you go to the Labrador Sea, it's very small. We are cranking out 8 million tons of carbon dioxide a year, and it's now increasing 2.5% every year. Now 385 parts per million and rising by 2.3, I think that's now 2.5 parts per million a year. In economically booming China and soon India, carbon dioxide generation is exploding. A new power plant in China that could supply Kiev with electricity, built every 7 to 10 days, burning coal, the worst fuel, creating only carbon dioxide and soot and sulfur. Every ton of burning coal makes over three tons of carbon dioxide, which doesn't even seem possible. If you have a solid, it becomes a gas. Well, you do the molecular weights, add carbon to 2 oxygens, and it's over 3 times heavier to make carbon dioxide. And, you know, for a long time they were, you know, they weren't doing that. China has nothing but coal. They don't have oil, they don't really have gas. And after being stable for 8 years, Chinese coal burning in 2 years up to this 2-year period up to 2004 increased 46%. Then using 10 times as much coal as all of Africa, leading to a worldwide coal increase of 16%. They became the world's greatest polluter in 2006, which, you know, I thought when I was looking at the figures, I said, these guys are going to take over the world really, really soon. And per capita, the Chinese are only using a tenth of the electricity of America per person, per capita, which means, you know, and they're increasing. They wanna be like first world. Everybody wants to be first world. They wanna do everything, have all the electrical appliances. So that's increasing exponentially. You know, in 5 years, it'll be 2/10. So it'll mean, you know, they're doubling. Their use of electricity is doubling probably in 5 years. Even America's use of coal has gone up 54% from 1980 to 2000. And America's very, you know, aware of how bad coal is. 90% for generating electricity. And is expected to rise another 25% by 2020. Europe plans to convert dozens of, well, I don't even know, what's oil now? How much expensive is oil? But it was $115 a barrel, oil-burning plants into coal, energy, you know, power plants, and build more new ones. In the 1990s, CO2 emissions increased by only 1.5% a year. So coal's effect has been catastrophic. Look, the poor polar bear. This is the cycle. Let's see if it actually stops. This is the actual, like, cycle of carbon dioxide. That's really pretty amazing. The human caused carbon dioxide is pretty small. It really is pretty small compared to natural fluxes. But there's monstrous amounts of this stuff in the ocean. That's the big storehouse for carbon dioxide, and that's usually absorbed. The carbon dioxide from the air. But we've really overwhelmed the system now. We put so much carbon dioxide in the air, it takes hundreds of years to reach equilibrium, to dissolve in the oxygen in the ocean, because, you know, it's not really being bubbled into the ocean, and it isn't very soluble, carbon dioxide. But there's like 750, this is like gigatons, billion tons of carbon dioxide. There's 750 gigatons in the air. There's a certain number of gigatons, something like, let's see, about 500-600, I believe, in the Arctic before they discovered new things. There's huge, huge amounts of limestone, but that's locked up, limestone rock, calcium carbonate rock. And then there's the stuff we make from burning fossil fuels. You know, they say 4,000 kilotons, I'm not sure. This is a year. 4,000 gigatons a year, which is, you know, it's a pretty spectacular amount. And it only started really 1750, and in reality only about 1850. All these changes have been since 1850, because, you know, the guys burning the fires for cooking and things is not a huge deal. But these giant industrial things where we're pumping the oil and pulling the coal out of the ground that took millions, hundreds of millions of years to form, and burning it all in a decade or two is radical, completely radical, and never seen before on Earth. Yet carbon dioxide isn't the worst actor. Methane has a warming effect 62 times that of carbon dioxide in the 20 years before it breaks down into carbon dioxide. It normally say 23 times over 100 years. But I'm more interested in, you know, flipping the seesaw. What's going to happen with these huge releases of gases? And we've been dumping this like mad into the atmosphere also. From rice paddies, tilling the soil, leaking natural gas pipes, cows. You know, atmospheric methane has increased twofold in 250 years. 2.5-fold. Misprint on this. And luckily for us, you know, we've increased it 2.5-fold in only 250 years. But luckily for us, there is 214 times less methane in the atmosphere than carbon dioxide. Even so, they think the warming effect now relative to it is maybe 35%. 35% of all the warming happening on Earth is methane. So what it means is changes in methane and emissions of methane are much, much more powerful than carbon dioxide because it's such a potent greenhouse gas. A little bit goes a real, real long way. There's only 1.8 parts per million of methane. There's about 385 parts per million of carbon dioxide. But it jumped for the first time in 2007. You know, the levels are jumping for the first time. For some reason, it's been kind of stable. something maybe is using the methane, and it's been stable for a decade, they say. About half of all methane is generated naturally in volcanoes, peat bogs, organic decompositions, altogether 500 to 700 megatons a year, but that's very uncertain. It's very, very uncertain. In other words, it's like almost two orders of magnitude less than carbon dioxide. But what's so scary is that they've discovered new giant sources of methane. And this is why everybody has reason to worry here, why this is, you know, related to Kiev and Russia and Ukraine, because across Siberia, all this stuff is melting. The organic material that's been locked up for 200,000 years through two ice ages is now becoming, like, exposed. It's melting and it's decomposing. It's breaking down into carbon dioxide and methane. And normally, these things will melt for a week or two. But, you know, they melt for a month, two, 3 months, the stuff breaks down. And peat bogs is like dead organic material. Grasses, animals, stuff that just sort of gets crushed down and it breaks down a little, but it doesn't really break down because it's too cold. It freezes. You know, it's frozen almost all the time. And over, there's huge peat bogs. You can burn peat. They actually will dig it up in the ground and burn it in Ireland and Scotland. But so this is happening all across Siberia, all across Canada. You know, this organic material is breaking down, and when it's wet, when it's underwater, it breaks down as methane, which this woman says. Then there's nitrous oxide, 300 times more potent than carbon dioxide, and this lasts 114 years before it breaks down. This comes from fertilizer, farming, deforestation, and car exhaust. Car exhaust is a big thing. Half of all the carbon dioxide, half of all the pollution, at least in America, is caused by cars. Now, this is really tiny. You know, we've increased it by man. It's very, very small. It's like 0.31 parts per million. And the worst stuff, the artificial chlorofluorocarbons. This is stuff they managed to ban, which is incredible. Scientists got together in the 60s, and they said, this is destroying the ozone layer, because this stuff apparently is indestructible. The fluorochlorocarbons use it in spray cans, propellant, they use it in refrigerators, they use it in a million places. But this particular types that they were worried about, they were so freaked out when they saw the ozone hole was disappearing over Antarctica, because it basically keeps us alive. We'd be blind without the ozone. The ultraviolet would just, you know, blind us and burn, you know, kill a lot of things. It's sort of what allowed life to exist on Earth. And so the scientists got together in the old days, when people believed scientists, and Republicans in America believed scientists, you know, and they banned it. The world got together and banned these things. And the ozone hole is now, you know, shrinking. The ozone sort of being reformed. Now, ozone in the upper atmosphere is real good. It protects us by reflecting these ultraviolet rays. At the Earth, at the ground level, it's another deadly pollution. It causes global warming, and it really causes asthma. It comes from a lot of cars cause ozone. Like in the really badly polluted cities, Mexico City, they have terrible, terrible ozone. Taken together, this stuff is considered thousands of times stronger greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide. Thousands of times, and it's indestructible. It lasts thousands of years. Taken together, the many halocarbons contribute about double the warming effect of methane or of nitrous oxide. And let's see, this is a really, I'm And methane is about, warming effect, yeah. Halocarbons contribute about double the warming effect of nitrous oxide, and methane does about 2.5 times more than the halocarbons and carbon dioxide 2 times more than methane.
Stop sliding.
Yeah. Although it's, you know, I could run it. Yeah, just run it through. You're gonna just watch. Yeah, watch it. You have something else to watch. I'll try to find where I am when I'm at it. The thing is, these gases' reinforcing and coordinate effects on the atmosphere hasn't really been taken into account. You know, talk about the global warming usually just means carbon dioxide. Methane may be the time bomb that does us in. Maybe 900 billion tons of carbon exist as organic material in the tundra peat bogs and permafrost of Siberia, Greenland, and Canada, immobilized in the frozen ground, locked in the frozen ground. The worst warming is in the Arctic, 3 to 6 degrees centigrade in the night. And it's suddenly melting 115,000-year stable tundra the size of France and Germany combined into a patchwork of mud and lakes, allowing the natural decomposition of all that organic material into methane. Russian scientist Sergei Kropotkin, who runs this real advanced research institute near Chukotka that goes up the Arctic Sea and looks at the lakes there, said it was an ecological landslide that's probably irreversible and undoubtedly connected to global warming, which has all happened in the last 3 to 4 years. If it's waterlogged and low oxygen environment, you'll get methane. If it's aerated, not soggy, you'll aerobically decompose with air, that means, and oxygen, and you'll get carbon dioxide, says UCLA hydrologist Larry Smith, who has extensively studied Siberian lakes and rivers. His research says Siberia is drying because the permafrost barrier is melting, allowing some lakes to drain away through porous deposit, like pulling the plug out of a bathtub. It's a lot faster when it's dry, because then you have more oxygen to use. The bacteria get more energy, says University of Alaska, Katie Walter. Walter worked in the same place with Kropotkin. In 3.5 years in northeastern Siberia, Walter's joint Russian-American team found methane hotspots bubbling to the 40-degree minus winter frozen lake surface so fast that it couldn't freeze, an effect that indicates there's much more organics than thought. We think it's biological decomposition of the rich Pleistocene grasslands that the mammoths, bison, and lions were eating, she said from her office in Prince William Sound Science Center, Alaska, not far from where they have the oil pipeline coming out in the coast of southern Alaska. It was the Serengeti of the North, really organically rich, and all the grass and dead animals are decomposing. It's constantly bubbling up like the lake is boiling. 40 degrees minus. That's something to think about. In a May 2006 presentation to the U.S. Senate, she estimated a breathtaking 500 gigatons of carbon in the Siberian Yudoma ice complex, almost as much as all the vegetation on Earth, which is 650 gigatons. If we look at that chart, does this stop?
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, look, this is how you do it. You just can't. Almost as much as all the vegetation on Earth. Worse, she claims, if thawed, it could mostly decompose within a century. Now, the thing that's so shocking is this doubles the amount of organic material they thought was in the Arctic, just as one thing she found. The YIC, the Yudoma Ice Complex, is a 25-meter layer bigger than Texas. That's 50 to 90% ice, soil, and about 2.5% organic remains, which is doesn't sound like much, but it's 20 times more than normal soil, deep soil. It's formed from loss, a strange wind-blown dust that afflicted the end of the last ice age, according to Sergei Zimov of the plushly outfitted Russian Northeast Science Station near the Arctic Ocean, 800 miles west of northwest Alaska. The carbon isn't in a narrow 2-meter band like the peat bogs. These grasses were growing, clarifies Walter, but they had a high accumulation rate, and the surface was riding higher and higher. We're talking about 25 meters thick for a million square kilometers. So this is like one of the shocking new things that, you know, you go, wow, look, the stuff in the Arctic is twice as much as we all thought. Wow, that's going to change things. And it's apparently decomposing fast. I did the calculations on it, and if just that one thing, if only 0.5% is decomposing a year in that thing she found, it would double the global warming across the world for everything that humans caused. What they call anthropogenic global warming, or AGW, human-caused global warming. Because that's what we're concerned about. We're concerned about what we're doing, what we can stop. You get it to ask questions. And I'll give you the link for the article online. You can look at it later if I'm speaking much too fast. It's complicated. When it thaws out, you get a longer growing season, more vegetation, and they're going to uptake more carbon dioxide, explains Smith. As far as CO2 exchange, there are huge magnitudes of influx and efflux, absorption by the ocean and the plants, and emissions from the Earth's surface going in both directions, about 215 gigatons a year. The difference between the two and that of human emitted is very a small margin. The plants, the perilously declining plants and trees, net remove about 1.5 or 2 gigatons a year of human emissions. And the oceans, maybe another 2 gigatons. Historically, before man mucked things up, there were supposedly about 3 gigatons a year more carbon dioxide absorbed than emitted, a cushion for fires and volcanic emissions. Now there's 3 to 4 gigatons a year more than can be absorbed by all the sinks. Sink meaning where you pour the water, something that absorbs something. Excluding limestone, the total amount of carbon in the Earth's cycle is 47,000 gigatons, 40,000 in the oceans, 4,000 in fossil fuels, 1,600 in the soil, 900 in the tundra, 750 in the atmosphere, and 650 in the vegetation, with maybe up to 8,000 gigatons uncertainty. A lot of uncertainty in this stuff. These are giant estimates. Another problem is because of a warming in the Arctic, large portions of the whole coastline in the Arctic, 8,000-mile weakened tundra coastline, are eroding and falling into the Arctic Sea and releasing their stored gases. During winter, you have sea ice attached to the shore. It's called fast ice. As warming continues, it's open water, and waves are crashing against the shore, clarifies Smith. There's a lot of erosion taking place. Up to 20 meters a year disappears in Alaska, says Walter's paper. The potential danger from methane is immense. If just, let's see, 0.5%, what I just said before, 0.5% decomposes a year over a century, it would create a century-long warming effect, double all the net human-caused emissions in the world. You know, take that, seesaw. But it gets worse. Huge amounts of methane are locked up in a crystalline hydrate, ice, or clathrate. This stuff, which is amazing, this stuff at the bottom of the ocean and sediments below 500 meters, or about 200 meters in the Arctic. They only form under great pressure and extreme cold. And there's monstrous amounts of this stuff. USGS scientist Tim Collett, who has studied them for 20 years for commercial production, is bullish. That means he's gung-ho for it. He says, if we could produce gas from only 1% of all the hydrates, the U.S. would have enough gas to last 170,000 years. There's supposedly twice as much clathrate methane, this stuff, or hydrate methane, as all the other fossil fuels combined. All the coal, gas, oil, everything. And they're beginning to mine it. They're enormous, agrees Smith. Schmidt concurred. He agreed. The Chinese funded a well in Malak on the Mackenzie River Delta in northern Canada and found clathrate 1,000 meters down and successfully extracted it with heat and vacuum. And now they and the Indians are drilling on their own coasts. These are our locations of all these different clathrate deposits off the ocean, where the stuff just sits at the bottom like ice, like rocks of ice. And actually, this guy is crazy, because this stuff contains 62 times more gas than this volume. So it's explosive. It's very dangerous. This guy, I think he could blow his hands off doing this. From a drilling ship, methane hydrate contains 168 times more gas than its volume. From a drilling ship in the Indian Ocean, you can reach anybody anywhere, Collette replied that clathrate was found as shallow as 300 meters under permafrost in Alaska and Canada. But his charts show it could theoretically exist as shallow as 80 meters. I did a lot of research for this. Huge deposits exist off the Carolinas, Washington, the North Slope of Alaska, Western Central America, Japan, and about 50 other places. Solid clathrate ice should float to the surface, but gaseous methane tends to dissolve in the ocean in a few hundred meters, whereupon bacteria eat the methane and produce carbon dioxide, says Walters. Now, if the ocean's warm enough to set this stuff free, we're talking hothouse horror, which they believe happened 55 million years ago in the Paleocene-Eocene thermal maximum. Remember that? Tetum, which is, you know, kind of an interesting phrase. When the Earth heated 15 degrees centigrade, hotter than today. Northern America was tropical. Redwoods grew over Greenland, and one could go swimming on the North Pole. The entire ocean was heated 8 degrees centigrade down to the bottom, and 40% of all the micro species perished from lack of oxygen. They believe a huge methane belch happened then because of an absence of heavy carbon in living sediments, which is reduced in these methane ice. Gavin Schmidt thinks that's impossible today. The ocean is so large and has such large heat capacity that it takes an enormous amount of energy to warm it, says the editor of the readable source realclimate.org from his office in New York City. This is a really cool picture. I love this picture. This is from Al Gore's book. This is a vertical river going straight down 2 kilometers into the ice in Greenland. And there's a lot of these. And they get to the bottom, and then the water spreads out, you know, lubricates the whole bottom of the thing, makes channels, and basically the whole Greenland. Antarctica is melting a lot, too, but it's much more stable in Greenland. Greenland is very scary, the changes and the melting in the Greenland. It seems these devastating superheating eras happen about once every 100 million years. This is, I'm speculating a little. So there may be some astronomical source like the sun's rotation around the Milky Way. If all the CO2 in carbonate rocks, limestone, cooked off, which is impossible, but that's what's happened on Venus, which is, you know, hell on Earth, that it has atmosphere 100 times thicker, made of carbon dioxide, it's hot enough to melt lead, the clouds are sulfuric acid, and it's as much pressure as 1,000 meters down in the ocean. And that's what they think happened on Venus, that all the carbonate rocks broke down in the heat. The carbon dioxide absorbed the heat, and finally the actual rocks broke down and released all their carbon dioxide and made it just, you know, a hell. The Earth would look like the Danteist hell of Venus. UCSB, University of California, Santa Barbara, Jim Kennett, author of the clathrate gun hypothesis, thinks the lower continental shelf clathrates are responsible for abrupt heating spikes in the middle of the last ice ages, too, because the 105-meter drop in ocean levels, you know, when there's ice age, ocean level drops because all the ice goes to the poles, in about 100 meters, have reduced pressure enough for them to break down, because the pressure, the water wasn't as deep, so there wasn't enough pressure on the clathrates to keep them, you know, together. They broke down. Or changes in the proto Gulf Stream suddenly exposed them to much more heat. The old Gulf Stream, original. In ocean sediments offshore of California, colleagues at Woods Hole recently found geothermal traces of clathrate releases coincident with warnings in the Greenland ice core records, says Schmidt in a long paper. Clathrate bubbling out of sediment can cause immense undersea landslides, like one that happens 260 meters thick and hundreds of kilometers long periodically off of Norway, called Storegga, relieving pressure on the buried hydrates and then causing immense further methane release. UCSB scientists recently released witnessed blowouts of methane from the sea floor in the Santa Barbara Channel. Schmidt and company think methane has been vastly underestimated, probably accounting for one-third of all warming. That's now pretty much confirmed. That's what I would be saying, like one-third, 35% of all the warming coming from methane because of reaction with nitrogen oxides and sunlight to pre-create the irritating pollutant ozone in smog. It's a good 25 kilometers up, but it's another giant potent greenhouse gas that's been tied to extreme warming in the Arctic. I was swimming across a lake in where I live in Rhode Island one day in like 40 degree weather, which I do, you know, like kilometers or so back and forth. And I'm trying to get out and I'm stymied from getting out by floating layers of seaweed and algae. And I'm standing on it. It's on the bottom of the water. I'm barely standing on it, on a loose bed of the stuff, you know, a plethora of bubbles pop to the surface, which I sniff. It has a slight delicate odor, you know, pure methane. It's not the foul stench from humans or animal gas, which is other compounds, or the distinctive odor of natural gas, which, at least in the West, not so much here, is treated so that people don't blow themselves up, you know, by leaving the gas on. Here I don't think you treat it, really, to do that. You know, methane, not even recognized as a global greenhouse gas 35 years ago, may become the most dominant and life-changing one. It has the power to fuel man's future or devastate his world. And the only good thing about methane is it's easier to sequester, to trap the carbon dioxide made from burning methane because it's clean. So it's easy to pump the gas somewhere if theoretically you could trap it. Push, you know, pipe it down. They're talking about that, piping it down into the Earth's surface underground or piping it into the oceans, which is risky. It could give us 20 years or so, but you pipe it down 600 meters, it'll just dissolve. That's where most of it is. Here's another new thing I discovered. Another stunner is the apparently true contention of dimming the sun, which proved that high-altitude air pollution had blocked about 10% of the sunlight we normally would be receiving over the last 50 years. Most potent are the jet contrails that deposit reflective particles, sulfur particles, in the upper atmosphere that circulate in the low stratosphere, where they discovered in the 4 days after 9/11, you know, the attacks in the World Trade Center, when all planes were grounded in America, they discovered somebody crunched the numbers miraculously and found the temperature went up 1 degree centigrade all across America. And, you know, they kept looking and looking and finally said this must be it. The planes were grounded. It happened that fast. Just from that. A more intensive analysis of world weather, they spent another 2 years or so looking at all the world's weather since about 1920, shows that that's roughly the amount that stratospheric pollution from jets is reducing the temperature all over the world, 1 degree centigrade. A little more than it's gone up in the last 150 years. In fact, that cooling is over half that of the total global warming, which means that the real global warming, if that cooling was suddenly stopped from grounding all the planes or economic collapse, which almost happened. A lot of, you know, in this economic collapse, planes were, a lot of airlines are teetering on bankruptcy, and at any point, half of them could stop operating. That the real global warming is over half of twice what we see. And all calculations based on the observed warming are way too low. And other people, you know, there's some scientists that contest this, but this is obviously, you know, some serious thing because the sulfur particles reflect heat And that's one of the things they're thinking of that we'll probably do by default to try to stop this.
I know. Maybe we can shift to a question period.
Okay, well, let's see. How about, let me just finish this page, all right? Like about three or four more minutes, right? This finally explains why the temperature rises are smaller than expected and showcases the extraordinary risk if this cooling were suddenly stopped from massive plane groundings, bankruptcies, gas prices, recession, a war. In fact, if this effect ceased, we might be dealing with extreme effects, 3-degree rise by 2050, or 5 to 10 degrees rise by the end of the century, centigrade, enough to melt some of the ice caps and totally change the ecology of Earth. Even a 50% reduction of flights would have an instant devastating effect, increasing the human-caused global warming by 50% at one point. High-altitude particulate pollution also provides sea cooling by providing seeds for water droplets that form in greater number and smaller size, making clouds more reflective than larger droplets. Dust from the Chichen and Pinatubo volcanoes cooled the whole Earth for a year each in 1982 and 1991. Sometimes scientists are skeptical, claiming only a 4% solar reduction from 1961, which is when the jets started flying, commercial jets. But others are extraordinarily aggressively advocating deliberate high-altitude sulfur releases to manage and limit global warming, an extraordinarily risky solution that quite possibly will be enacted by default, called mitigation. It's nice to see that evil civilization does provide competing forces to deleterious change, but still, this is breathtaking development in climate science, and worrying because if high-altitude pollution is reduced, that could quickly cause large warming effects. On the other hand, NASA scientists have hypothesized that up to a fourth of the last century's warming could be due to soot landing on ice, making it darker so it absorbs more heat, just confirmed by Scripps Institute at a third of all warming. Black soot goes up from carbon, you know, the particles of black carbon. It absorbs the heat in the atmosphere, makes the atmosphere hotter, falls to the ground 2 weeks, lands on ice, melts the ice. Temperate glaciers are thinning at 5 feet a year, five times the average of 1980 to 1999. Chinese coal soot has become a plague in western U.S. At pristine Lake Tahoe, it's detectable in near-urban concentrations, solely from Chinese emissions. Introducing modern technology to China's abysmal coal plant would cause immediate big reduction in warming by stopping its soot. The warming is accelerated by 8 to 10 feedback loops, and this is another thing that's really, really terrifying, where the warming causes something that increases the warming. As the ice melts off the Arctic, the shiny white mirror that reflects 85% of the heat becomes dark ocean that absorbs 95%, or tundra that absorbs maybe 80%. As the moisture is evaporated into the atmosphere, the most powerful greenhouse gas of all, water vapor, jacks up the temperature, raises the temperature more. Hurricanes cause more hurricanes, put more moisture in the air. Every year since 1980, water vapor has increased 1% in the upper atmosphere, partially from methane breakdown and jet contrails. And as the world bakes and dries, monster forest fires turn millions of acres of carbon forests that are sinks that hold us carbon into carbon dioxide. 10% of Alaska's interior burned in 2004 and 2005. And its worst disaster, natural disaster, Australia in February was subject to Dante's Inferno. Well, February a year ago. Where Saharan, 48 degrees centigrade temperatures, weeks of drought, and hurricane force winds, 140 kilometers an hour, created a mega fire in Victoria that incinerated many towns, killed 100 people, even though people driving, you know, 130 kilometers an hour in their cars, it caught up to them. If it had hit a big city, it would have killed tens of thousands, everybody there says. Luckily, it was all sort of remote, but it went across half of a whole province. Nobody's ever seen that, 48-degree temperatures. Anyway, this is the This is the thing you, that, this is that fire in Australia. These are the super hurricanes. In 2005, there were four Category 5 hurricanes slamming into America. Absolutely incredible. I lived in New Orleans. We all knew it was going to go down. We all knew it was going to die because it was below sea level. It was a bathtub, and once it flooded, it wasn't going to, like, drain. It all had to be pumped out. The only thing that kept New Orleans existing was 12 pumping stations that pumped the water out all the time, 24 hours. And they made a bad decision to do it that way. This is the vanishing snows of Kilimanjaro. It'll probably be gone in 5 years. And this is the thing that's really the most scary thing of all. This is the thing that should give everybody nightmares. This is the real land surface of Antarctica, what you think of as Antarctica. It doesn't exist. There's no continent of Antarctica. It's all West Antarctica. This is all below sea level, all this blue stuff. The only land is the part stuff that's showing there. So you have 2, 3, 4 kilometers of ice sitting on the bottom of the ocean. And if this stuff breaks loose, you know, any big piece of this breaks loose and goes into the deep ocean, I think it could cause, like, tsunamis that would make the Indonesia tsunami look like nothing. I mean, really bad. And it doesn't take much. About 700 million people live under 10 meters altitude, and about 2.5 billion live under 30 meters altitude. Almost every big city in the world, except for here, Moscow, Mexico City, Cairo, a few of them, maybe 20, is on the coast, is on the ocean. And if it's true, I can't see why it wouldn't be true. It would happen over and over and over again for centuries. And so, you know, you may be looking at the last good days. Anyway, I'm open for questions. Yes?
Was the part of clathrate carbon dioxide just why is it used to signify carbon hydrocarbon dioxide? Why is this part clathrate?
It's methane. It's just another term for methane. It's CH4. It's methane, and methane is natural gas. You know, when you turn on the gas, that's what it is. Almost all methane, and methane forms this strange complex with ice, with water ice, at extreme pressures and extreme cold. You know, 2 degrees, 3 degrees centigrade.
It's like carbon acid?
It's like ice. Looks just like ice, except that ice has 160 times more gas in it than the volume. So it makes a big amount of methane, and they can mine it now and burn it. You know, use it as a natural gas source.
And how many years approximately do you envision for the global warming devastating effect to affect the Earth so much as to the extent of causing, like, maybe wiping the humankind out from the surface?
They won't wipe us out of existence because we're very persistent. We are the new cockroaches, I think. This is the thing. I went up to this. I took pictures of this about 20-something years ago. It was a 100-year-old tourist attraction. The highest snowfall on Earth, this place, Paradise, on the side of Mount Rainier, about 2 kilometers up. And Volkswagen-sized pieces of ice were falling down around me for two hours. Within 5 years, this is gone. It's melted, completely disappeared.
Well, what if the core gets affected by the global warming so much that it gets so out?
Don't worry about the core.
That's some
TV. That's some movie thing.
Just like, do you think that, like, if life is wiped out, would it be possibly any chance of it re-emerging again, like Charles Darwin said, from the scratch? Do you think this re-evolution?
Well, don't worry about the core. That's some nonsense for movies.
I mean magma. All this magma. If core gets outraged,
it's atmosphere. We're talking about atmosphere. We don't care about the core. Has nothing, no effect whatsoever on the core or probably on any kind of volcanic activity. It's entirely atmosphere and weather. But that's enough. This is another thing that's really terrifying. This may be why you've had the last 2 cold winters. Now, I'm not sure about this. This is something that was a big Nature article 3, 4 years ago. I haven't found any confirmation on this in the web. You can look this up. I'm very interested in it. But they said, you know, according to all the sensors, just exactly like the theory of this 2000 and or the Day After Tomorrow movie, that one third of the Gulf Stream is split off and is making a loop south. And I thought, wow, that's true. That was like 2006 or 2005. And then immediately they had a killing cold wave across Russia, Eastern Europe in 2006. You had this bitter winter this year, another bitter winter last year, and maybe there's something to it. Now, the thing is, the reason this happened is because the meltwater, see, the Gulf Stream goes up here, sinks, and flows along the bottom of the ocean back in a loop. And all the meltwater coming off of Greenland glaciers over 40 years, they have been afraid of this for 40, 50 years, they think has diluted this water because it sinks because it's heavy with salt, because it evaporates, it's hot. The water evaporates, it gets heavy, it sinks here, and they think this meltwater has interfered with that. It's diluted it, so it's not heavy, so it doesn't sink, and then it breaks the return loop. And the thing is that they were always afraid of, historically, was that that would cause the ice age. Because warm period has been about 12,500 years. They normally only last 12,000 to 18,000 years. And I don't think there's no possibility of that. But it's really, if the Gulf Stream has been really screwed up like this, it's a Mobius strip. It goes all over the world. It's connected to everything else. And it means the weather patterns are going to radically change all over the world.
What would you say each of us individually should do to contribute somehow to the decreasing effects of the global warming? Let's say, do you have any suggestions about that?
I don't know. There are things people can do. You know, you can just put plastic over your radiator rather than open the window. You could save, you know, 20% of the energy if everybody did that. Cover the radiators. Be a terribly simple thing. If they wanted to, you know, have a nice communist program, go through all the factories, these horrible inefficient factories, you could easily, doing real simple things, stop about 20-30% of all the waste. But in terms of what the threat to the human race is, well, you know, I came up with this tsunami thing. So far, I haven't heard anybody else say this. If it's true, I can't see why it isn't true. I tried to interview about three glaciologists, and very interestingly, they wouldn't talk to me, which is really kind of strange, because every other top person has. The thing that's probably the greatest danger is just a worldwide drought, some absolute killing drought, like something Australia's had, that goes all across America, Europe, Ukraine, Russia, and suddenly, you know, 50% of all the crops fail. And there's only enough food for 60 or 70% of the world's population. And who's going to get that food? I'll tell you what, it's not going to be the poorest 20 or 30%. It'll be the people who have money. And I frankly expect something like that within 10 years. Definitely 20. I mean, really, absolutely, definitely 20. Because it's just that's coming. It's, you know, it's such a global phenomenon at some point. What happens with these huge shifts of currents and weather is you get shifts of Gulf Stream, of the air, you know, the huge wind currents. And suddenly, everybody has a different climate, you know? I mean, at one point, Sahara was a nice paradise, grassland, it was a beautiful place. And it wasn't really humans that destroyed it, it was just some kind of shift in the jet stream and the currents of the air that blew over it, and it became the deadest place on Earth, just about. Some other questions?
And why do you think so many people try to refute the theory of global warming, like saying, well, it's just a fiction. In fact, it's all in our mind. It doesn't really exist. Like, especially in America, all this controversy going on. Many people watch news and say, oh, global warming effects.
Like, because first of all, it's not many people. It's just very, very tiny numbers of people. And scientists, it's really tiny numbers, under 1%. And there's giant money involved. Hundreds of billions of dollars. Everybody has coal, everybody has oil, everybody who wants to develop their country that is a third world country or second world country is that this can't be true because we can't improve our life without burning all this stuff. We don't know how to change. Europe's changed. America could have changed. We, 10 years ago, 12 years ago, we had a beautiful electric cars. 14 years ago, government regulations said you have to have 0% polluting cars. And the car companies made them, and then they destroyed them when Bush came to power and his judges overturned the laws. That was tragic, really tragic, because electric cars are maybe 50% efficient compared to having a motor with a battery that turns the wheel. It's compared to 12% efficient for internal combustion, which, you know, all the energy goes up as heat and just wasted. And everybody wants a car, you know? China, India, everybody who has money suddenly wants a car. They want that independence. They want to drive. I don't blame them at all. Is it still running? Oh, wait.
No, it's not yours.
Where's mine? Have I lost mine?
Oh.
What? Why is it in my pocket? Oh, well, never mind.
Perhaps you were so excited about the lecture accident.
No, I'm going, oh, I got to put it away or I'll forget it, you know? It's like some kind of like retarded response. So the Gulf, this Gulf Stream, this is the salinity. This is like diluted, just fresh water, salty water, because where it's hot, it evaporates in the Caribbean. You see there's giant amounts. There was like 28,000 cubic kilometers of extra fresh water that's melted off of Greenland that they think has diluted the Gulf Stream and maybe caused this shifting of the Gulf Stream.
Hey, Michael, what do you think the most hazardous, most susceptible area for this global effect is? I mean, well, to say, like, what area might possibly be mostly affected by the results of the global warming?
Well, the Arctic is changing the most. You know, it's going to probably kill the polar bears really quickly, because the northern ice sheet is disappearing. If it completely disappears, they starve, because the polar bears eat nothing but seals, and they go out on the ice to do that. And they thought it was going to even be gone like in a year or so, I mean over the summer. And the thing is, because of these feedback loops, it doesn't necessarily come back. If it melts completely, suddenly it's all absorbing the sun and getting hotter and hotter and hotter. And then, you know, each winter, it forms its less and less and less ice in the Arctic. You know, but that's real localized. It's not something that's gonna affect us too terribly. You know, the really greatest danger is worldwide crop failure from it, I think. And this stuff, anybody on the coast. I mean, imagine if this stuff's right, even a 10-meter worldwide tsunami. And I think these things, big pieces of ice, would cause tsunamis that are really long period that would go all over the world. But even a 10-meter tsunami that goes all over the world would be utterly devastating. It would kill, I don't know, millions, tens, hundreds of millions, who knows. Everybody lives on the coast. And the thing that's so terrifying is it would happen over and over again, so all the cities would be depopulated, all the people on the coast, you know, within 10 meters or 15 or 20 meters would flee inland. And it could just about half destroy civilization. Just that, a complete breakdown of civilization. And I can't see why it wouldn't happen. I've got to talk to my good scientist and brainstorm with it and say, you know, well, because they found proof on the island of Lanai. I lived in Hawaii 3 years. On the island of Lanai off of Maui, it's like a cone-shaped island about 400 meters high. I wanted to get a picture. At the 250-meter level, there's like this brown bathtub ring, and all the thing below it is discolored brown. And that's how high the wave came from this huge landslide on the Big Island, which has the volcanoes, the longest erupting volcanoes. And I worked on the top of the telescopes there in Mauna Kea. And even now, Big Island's very dangerous. The whole one-fourth of the island has a huge rift across it. And so there was a giant landslide where a fourth of this island slid off into the ocean. And Hawaii is the biggest mountain on Earth. It's higher than Everest from ocean bottom and 2,000 kilometers at the base. And that caused this monstrous wave that, you know, and you can see the evidence on this island, like 250-meter high wave. It's not an illusion. And they've tracked back asteroid impacts now from tens of thousands of years ago and tracked wave depositions on different places in Africa and the islands. And maybe there's some proof of that from the melting, from the last ice age, you know, when the last ice age melted, that there were. But the problem is anything like that would be destroyed by subsequent things, you know, and weathering. It's very hard for evidence of that kind of thing to be still exist. somebody else. I'm perfectly available to
and
listen.
Earthquakes, are they connected with the global warming?
No. I don't think so. I don't think so at all. The Earth weather is a huge and powerful and monstrously, devastating system, but I don't think the surface stuff is really connected with the ground stuff at all. Maybe something in ocean currents or whatever, but the tectonic processes of Earth are immutable. I mean, they're almost unchangeable. They're just gigantic, and what's happening way down in the surface where the stuff is coming from, like the islands of Hawaii are over a hot spot, you know? And that hot spot's existed for, I don't know, 50 million years. And the islands, the mantle moves across this spot in the mantle, and the crust moves across the spot, and it keeps melting through the crust and popping up a new island. And east of the Big Island of Hawaii, there's an island that's going to come up in 13,000 or 130,000 years, Lohi. It's still 1,000 meters under the surface, but it's come up from, you know, from 6,000 or 7,000 meters below the surface. And that's been happening, you know, all the islands, and they're just in a line, going older and older and older as you go to the west. So, you know, there's the constant moving of the plates and the subsistence and stuff below other plates. That's what causes earthquakes. That's what causes volcanoes. You know, it's an incredibly amazing and interesting system, but I think it has nothing to do with the with the weather. Weather is a completely different phenomenon, but we live in the weather. This is our world. You know, we're not underground, and earthquakes are, you know, yeah, they're a little bit of a problem if you live in Santiago. My friend lives in Santiago. He said, you know, his friends had to kick down the door. They were always, like, locked. And I thought, wow, really? They're so polite. They kicked your door open right and run out of the apartment building? I said, they're nice people in Santiago. But he was in a good area. Other places got pretty wiped out. And, in fact, Hawaii has suffered two of the only fatal tsunamis from the biggest one in history. That happened in the same place in Chile, 9.5 Richter scale in 1960, that hit Hilo. I lived there for a while, a year or so, in the Big Island, and it has a bay that concentrates tsunamis, and twice they've had 100, 150 people killed by tsunamis. So there's pictures, cool pictures, of people running away, you know, with this wall of water, you know, that's about 5 meters high, like chasing them down the road, and you know, I don't know how the guy with a camera, I'm not sure if the guy with a camera survived. That was kind of interesting. Yes?
I wanted to ask about China and India. These countries are considered to be the most polluters. Mm-hmm. And are there environmentally friendly ways of solution for example, for industry?
Yeah, there's all kinds of things you could do. The Chinese are building these really dirty coal plants. I mean, primitive, dirty ones. They're also doing some real advanced things. They have some of the most advanced technology in the world because they're doing everything new. But most of it is the cheapest, junkiest thing that they can build. And so these coal plants, they don't just, like in America, they'll filter out most of the coal soot, the dust. They have electrostatic collectors and things that, you know, get it to precipitate or get it to fall down into it and can clean it. And they also burn low sulfur coal. You know, but that was in the days when people were worried about acid rain, you know, which is a big problem in mountain lakes and things. They've gotten so acid from the sulfuric acid in the coal burning that they're dead. They're just dead lakes and beautiful mountain areas all over the East in America. There are things they can do, yeah. China could really easily do a lot of things. If America or the West could help them improve their plants and make them much cleaner. You know, this coal dust apparently is causing 30% of all the heating, and that would be an easy thing to remove. The other thing is actual abatement, you know. Trying to reverse the effects, in other words, capture the carbon dioxide. It's pretty hard, but I don't know why nobody has tried it or even thought about it. We got pipelines all across America, all across Europe, all across Russia to supply natural gas and oil You could have the same thing for carbon dioxide. I think you could run pipelines to, through all these plants, especially these horrible coal plants. The volume may be way too much. The gas is maybe just way, way too high for anything like this that I'm thinking. But you could do a couple of things. One thing they're talking about is piping it down into the ground. They have no idea what this will cause. They have no idea how long it'll last. They have no idea what effect it'll have, whether it'll cause earthquakes. They have no idea if it'll pop to the surface in 5 years. And carbon dioxide is bad stuff. It'll kill you. You know, it's fatal in above about 11% concentration. So if you live like these people in Lake Nyasa, a couple of things in Africa, where the people, the lake just, you know, had a little burp, and all this carbon dioxide bubbled to the surface, and like 500 people were killed in their sleep, you know, because the carbon dioxide just asphyxiated them. So it's very bad if it comes, bubbles to the surface near cities, you know, especially if you live low. And they could do that. The other thing they could do is pipe it down in the ocean. And I'm torn between whether that's a proper thing to do, whether it makes sense. It's a possible intermittent thing if we were radically doing everything to stop it. You know, that we could do maybe 10 or 20 years without massive, terrible effects. But even now, the dissolved, extra dissolved carbon dioxide in the ocean has made it more acid. It's made it more acidic. And that's beginning to dissolve shells. So, and when it dissolves the shells, it releases carbon dioxide. You know, it's like there are all these loops, all these feedback loops. So I'm really torn about that. I thought that was a good idea to try to do something. The problem is that the Earth is this huge system. The whole weather climate is a big, massive system. So like anything big, it's slow. It has all this resistance in it. And you push it and push it and push it. And before it, you know, before it moves, finally you could stop pushing it and then it's going to move, you know. It has all this inertia. Like, so an object at rest doesn't want to move, or once it's moving, it wants to keep moving. And it's moving. It's moving now pretty fast. They say even if humans stopped all emissions, everything, right now, which of course is impossible, because we haven't even slowed the increase of emissions, you know, we've increased the increase, it still would go up something like 2 degrees centigrade by 2050 or the end of the century, you know, which is really stunning. So in many ways, we may be past the point of no return. The other thing they can do, and this is a worldwide global thing, is this high-altitude sulfur stuff, which you're going to hear a lot more of. This is going to be the big thing that they're all going to talk about. And I believe they'll probably do it. Once people really start to die from this, they'll do it, because it's not that hard to fly high-altitude jets and just burn specifically real dirty fuel with sulfur in it to put these particles in the air. What that'll do, nobody knows. Could destroy the ozone layer, you know? Guess what? You can't go outside without goggles. All the animals die because they go blind from the ultraviolet. I don't know. It's very, very, it's very dangerous geoplanetary tinkering. But it's the easiest solution. It's the easiest solution. It does cool the Earth. It works. And it happens naturally from volcanoes. So, you know, those are some things it can do.
Oh, Michael, we are limited in time. Maybe the last question.
Really? I thought we were at 8:30.
No.
Yeah. 8:30. This whole thing was 8:30.
Can I ask last question?
Yes.
So how do you think the climate will change in Ukraine in 20 years? Will it be a tropical climate where we have coconut palms and so on?
I don't know. You know, get beachfront land in the Black Sea. Actually, the thing is that I think the Mediterranean, the Straits of Gibraltar, will mostly protect against tsunamis and then Bosphorus. So I don't think you have any, you know, the Black Sea is anything really to worry about that, because there's something, you know, big wave will come through a narrow thing and then spread all out and become much, much smaller.
You think Ukraine is a protected haven and nothing will ever...
Protected haven, but if the food all, you know, if the heat waves... You know, drought kills the crops. You're lucky. You're very lucky in that you're a big food basket.
Global warming is not something that will exterminate the life from the surface of the earth. What to your mind will put the ultimate end to the human race?
Not for me to speculate. I think it'll be a lot hotter, and in some ways you'll be totally protected. You're very lucky that you have your own food. Even if 80% of the food is destroyed, you should have enough to feed yourself. You won't have any money from exporting it, but that's still fine. Anyway, let me finish with the last paragraph. A few years ago, geneticists tracked the Y-DNA transmitted unchanged from man to man to find the so-called Adam, the first man. They thought it would lead back hundreds of thousands of years and were stunned when it showed Adam living only 65,000 years ago among the famous Bushmen people of the Kalahari, San people. Within the same year, geologists investigating an unknown massive supervolcano, Toba, in Sumatra, which near the origin of the 2004 tsunami, almost exact same spot, that left very thick ash layers all over the world, dated it to 73,000 years ago, and they found it was the largest eruption in many millions of years, almost 3,000 cubic kilometers emitted. Mount St. Helens that blew the whole side off this mountain in Washington was 1 cubic kilometer. In other words, this monstrous eruption and the 6 years of global warming it caused, of global cooling and global winter that it caused in 2000 bitter winter came close to wiping out the human race. But they all came back from that one tribe in South Africa. And that is, I believe, this is 73,000 years ago. This is the cold 2000 year period, maybe at the depth of the last ice age. The coldest period, whatever. And so they think all the humans on Earth came back from the Bushmen people, genetically. They tracked the DNA all over the world. It's likely that these new findings mean that warming will be at least double what was expected in the worst case, maybe much more, and all the margin for delay is over. The Earth's climate is an enormous system with a huge amount of inertia. It will resist change and resist movement until the pressure is overwhelming, when it will swing unseeing and unstoppable, like a wrecking ball, towards our civilization. We've engaged in a massive, reckless experiment by deforesting the Earth, area 4 times the size of Switzerland, or the size of Washington State in America. Every year, a forest is destroyed. And altering our atmosphere, thinner proportionally than the skin of an apple, and the results will be appalling.
Thank you, Michael, for giving us so extensively research and just greatly informative lecture and making us conscious of the situation we're in and possible ways of solution. Let's give it a round of applause.
And if you want, if you want the address of this, my website is hammernews.com. HAMMERNEWS.
I can.
Feel free. Don't post anywhere. Whatever, send it to people. And I still, it's still kind of half secret. But any other questions? We were told 2 hours. 2 hours. What are you talking about?
Okay.
We've sent that thing out till 9 o'clock.
Well, exactly 2 hours from 6 to 8.
No, 6:30. Till 6:30.
So I see you liked here. So I think that each of you has had something for yourself, for himself, yourself, yeah. Such informative lecture, such very interesting pictures. I haven't seen some of them already, yeah. Michael, we wanted to present you some little presents from our from our organization.
Coffee.
Yeah, remember? Not coffee. Just a cup for coffee. Yeah. Coffee will be, yeah, it's with our left.
Okay.
Yeah, just to remember us.
To fill it with coffee.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yeah, we're very glad to see you here. And let's go to Ukrainian now. Там плакат, ще раз повторюю, будь ласка, залиште трошки свого часу, приділіть і напишіть там щось далі. А, ось плакат, зараз ми його розвернемо, дамо вам ручки, стікери. Так, і будь ласка, анкети, які вам роздали.
Правдиво.
Максимально правдиво, так, будь ласка, тому що дійсно це потрібно, да, щоб не було там якихось лестичів. І, будь ласка, анкети, які ми наповнювали, ось там є ящичок, так, де Катя? А, так же само, да. Там ящичок стоїть біля плакату. Тож, будь ласка, якось можливо складіть анкети і покладіть туди в ящичок, добре? Ну все, я дуже сподіваюся, що у вас тут буде інформативно і затишно. Все, дякую. Приходьте до нас ще.
Michael, great job, very research lecture. Just was really good.
I heard about the lecture,
but it was cool.
Great.
Hello, Michael. I'm a student of Technical Academy. I'm close to signing, so I don't want to sort of close the lecture, but now I have to ask you a question. I know that you know about Al Gore's program, you know about his film, The Ukrainian Frontier.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Is it really true that all his material are really scientific and well-grounded in his film? So, is it true, yeah? Is it real?
I'm Natalie. Thanks for inviting me.
Sure. Oh yeah, there's
from Russia.
Yeah,
right. Can I have marker or something?
Yeah.
Can't write money better?
You should write.
Just a guess, that's what they told us. This was the thing that you asked. On the statement? Just
want to the statement.
You have to say that. Or just, we'll say, just take this and write something in that direction.
Just
it depends what's right, yeah, but then